There is no true logic separate from the natural knowledge of the soul. How, turning away from that natural knowledge, can one understand the supreme truth? Okay, so the natural knowledge of the soul is the knowledge of the Supreme Lord, knowledge of their position as in relationship to the Supreme Lord. Right? That's natural knowledge of the soul. Right? So, other than that, there isn't actually any proper logic. There can't be true logic, because logic means it has to actually be a nice progression of the actual facts coming to a conclusion that's actually fact. Right? That would be logical. So you can only do that on the transcendental platform. So if we leave that transcendental concept, it just doesn't work. Right? Commentary by Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur. The logic that comes from the soul's own natural knowledge is pure and faultless. The philosophy that comes from such logic is the actual truth. Separated from that natural knowledge, true logic has no power to stand. Because logic is just a mechanical method to apply. Yes?
I just wanted to make the interesting point that natural knowledge is translated as sahajikam, which is the same word we get sahajya.
Oh, sahajikam.
Because it means natural or easy.
Oh, I see. Yeah. Okay. Okay. Yeah. Well, that's the idea of it's easy. Is that so? Here it's easy because it's natural. There it's easy because they're cheating.
Not exactly the same thing.
Yeah. Yeah. But okay. Right. Because as we mentioned before, logic is just the process of the intelligence, what it goes through. Now, if that is not done on that natural knowledge of the soul, then that logic will be imperfect, because in logic itself, you can't know God. Mm. Right? So true logic means when logic is applied in connection with the Supreme Lord. Mm. Yes.
So that's why Nyaya system is incomplete?
Yes, because they're not actually going on the knowledge of the soul. There's an idea that there's something higher, right? Because as he mentioned, is that when you have that Misra Sattva, then the what's mixed clouds. So there's an idea that there's something more than the material world, and you have to use your intelligence to understand that. But then they leave it at that. Therefore, the process is just properly aligned intelligence. And by that, then you can know the Supreme. But then the problem is no, the Supreme is connected with the spiritual. So material logic isn't going to do that. And they're not working on the natural knowledge of the soul. There's that glimmer. It means it's like the natural knowledge is there, clouded by the modes of nature. Right? That's what's happening. It means everything discussed in this book is concerning, at least in this first half of the book, is concerning the different kinds of views that people get by looking through that clouding of Misra Sattva. Right? So then you can get that it's just, okay, sense the soul is happiness, natural. There's an activity to get that. There's an identity. So I'm the controller and enjoyer, and I deal with the material energy for my enjoyment. Right? Even that someone could come to that material conclusion is still based on that clouded nature of the soul. Right? Because otherwise, you can't engage in something you don't have the nature for. Right? You know what I'm saying? But the point is in tasting that, that's supposed to be shared. Right? That's a higher principle. So then you have now the nice moral materialist. What do you call those guys? You have the selfish materialist.
Altruist.
Huh?
Altruist.
Is that the word he always uses?
Theistic moralism.
Isn't that... Oh, okay.
Selfless
materialist. Yeah, yeah. Okay, so you have the selfish. Oh, that's easy. The selfish. It's so obvious, right? The selfish materialist and the selfless, right? So then that's a natural step forward because it's actually closer to the nature of the soul. But it's still stopping short because its only purpose is sense gratification. That's the problem. It stops short. Right? Then when they get into understanding the higher, which we haven't gotten to yet, about the Varnashramites and stuff, you didn't get to that. Where there's knowledge of God means it's his creation and his laws. Because actually, that third platform of consciousness, though it's called the religious platform, then Ramanujacharya defines that it's only by following Varnashram that you're actually situated on that platform. Others are Upadharma, that's what they're below. They're not actually Dharma. They're kind of in that direction, but they're not actually real religion. Because they're still only talking about moralism, but they're talking about, they're connecting that moralism to God, right? And as Bhaktivinoda pointed out, it's when you take up that monotheistic idea, it makes your moralism better. Right? It means, in other words, you can try to be a good moralist, but you'll only really be a good moralist if you're a monotheist. Because then if there's God, then there's a reason to be moral. Right? Because God sees everything, so you can't really get away from him. So he knows what's going on. Does that make sense? So it appears that it's come to that actual religious platform. But it's still, I do my work, I get my results. So it's just karma. It's not actually the Dharma. Because the Dharma means that's the nature of things. So the actual dharma of the soul is to serve God. But at least to acknowledge his laws and stuff like that. Does that make sense? So you're slowly bringing it up that now you're acknowledging God and his position and stuff, his laws. So then that takes it to the next step. But it's still clouded because one's doing that for material benefit. Right? Like that. Then you see more is that, okay, there's the soul. I'm not the body. So then that's higher consciousness, means the clouding is a little thinner. Right? But what's the relationship between the soul and God? So still not. So it's only when you get to that fifth level of consciousness, the soul's own natural knowledge is there. Right? Then it's I'm servant of God. Right? In other words, my happiness is coming from somewhere else. So it's natural for me to serve that source. Right? That's the thing. That'll be defined later, no? He brings that up. The nature of how the soul looks at that. It's in this half or it's in the other half?
It's in Chaitanya Shikshamrita.
It's in Chaitanya Shikshamrita. Okay. You know what I'm saying? Because that's the natural knowledge of the soul. Could that be pulled?
Yeah.
Okay. It'll be there.
He gets into those points in the second half, but it follows a different structure.
Okay. But this element of, because he's talking about this natural knowledge, it would be natural to put, good to put that in. I think it's a...
Oh, yeah, it's coming up in the book.
Oh, it'll come up. Yeah. Okay. So we see. Okay. Okay. Separated from that natural knowledge, true logic has no power to stand, because true logic would be taking the natural knowledge of the soul and showing its progression and how everything connects to the Lord. But if you're not working on that natural knowledge, you're starting from the materialistic knowledge, then true logic doesn't work. So actually, in the world, even though somebody's giving very nice logic, it's not actually real logic. Because real logic means to prove how our relationship with the Lord. Does that make sense? It works in the logical mechanics. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? Yeah. Okay. However, logic that comes from material knowledge, the logic that's seen everywhere in this world is always mixed and impure. Right? Because that's what it means. True logic means it's pure. Mm-hmm. It's on the spiritual platform. But here it's mixed. So in this section, whenever we're talking about mixed, means mixed with material. So it's not actually pure. Mm-hmm. If philosophies that come from such mixed logic are always faulty and lacking, such philosophies are never good at describing God. Mixed logic is not the proper tool to describe the supreme truth. Pure logic, which takes shelter of the soul's natural knowledge, is the proper tool to describe the supreme truth. Here someone may ask, what is this natural knowledge of which you speak? The answer is, the soul is spiritual and therefore naturally full of spiritual knowledge. That original knowledge possessed by the soul is called here natural knowledge. That natural knowledge is eternally present in the soul. It is not created by perceiving the contents of the material world, right? Then when we talk about natural, how do you say? Knowledge, natural, what is it? There's a thing, natural theology. Natural theology or natural sciences. It's done by observing the world, seeing the patterns, and then and seeing the results of those patterns, then creating a philosophy from that. Right? It means you watch what goes on, and you see that birds always fly, and cats don't. Right? So as long as the bird keeps flying, then the cats don't catch them. Right? Unless the bird, of course, is in a cage. Right? Then if the bird flies, it's better for the cat.
Penguin.
Like that. See, the difficulty is that birds, when they fly, they always go up. Hmm. Right? Right? It means they fly up. But the problem is when you're on the bottom, if you go up, they'll bump into the ground. So therefore, they have to walk. Yeah. Like that. Yeah. You know, it's like that. You know, and the funny part is the water's up also. Yeah. So if you flew, it'd be a problem. Therefore, they swim. Make sense?
Yeah. Apparently, there's a lot I don't know about penguins.
Yes. Yes. Penguins also never meet polar bears.
Dodo, but he didn't do so well.
No, he didn't. He didn't. Dodo didn't do so well. Yes.
Yeah, Maharaj, one devotee last summer spoke that Christianity some centuries ago in Europe also, they have like a more elements of Varnashram, although it was certainly not like a direct connection to Vedic, but since there was a little bit more of this surrender to God in comparison to nowadays, they might be naturally some elements of Varnashram.
Kind of, yeah. But here the word natural is meaning spiritual. This means what's the natural, means the soul is spiritual, so the knowledge that's naturally there. That's what it means. Because even today, the world goes on by Varnashram. The problem is people don't follow it scientifically. You can't have a social system without Varnashram. You just can't, because it's like, let's say you have the president, okay, but he has a cabinet, he has advisors that are, you know, considered the best in their fields intellectually. Not necessarily, I mean, they're practically applying it, but they give advice, right? Then you have the president, then you have all the business people that give him money so he can run his campaign, right? You know, so there's a hierarchy there, right? And then there's the common person. Does that make sense? So it's always there. The problem is that there's a mix, because the Vaishyas are trying to get control of everything. Anything that they can make money out of, they do. Right? Because like in the Brahminical cultures, Brahmins, it's not based on making money. Right? And people, it's kind of like expected like that. Right? It's just like, let's say you're a teacher. Okay? That you're getting a low salary, no one really complains, right? Except the teachers, of course. But you know what I'm saying? It's just kind of like normal. But now, if this guy opens, he knows his subject. He's a teacher, let's say, at the university. And he's getting his, whatever it is, his how do you say, what would you call it? Poultry amount or his pittance or whatever it is like this. Then, but if now he's so good in this, now if he opens his own, consultancy, and now makes 100 times what that is, everybody says, yeah, of course. Because now it's a business. You understand? So it's just understood that these things are there. But at the same time, they're supposed to support so that you get a better... They're not looking at it that if people aren't educated, then they don't do well. Right? Does that make sense? No? So, the whole point is it's varnashram, but it's just not scientific. Now, sometimes they're more aware of it, sometimes they're not. You know what I'm saying? Because nowadays they'll say, oh no, but we don't designate people. Why do you, then what's, who are white-collar workers? Who are blue-collar workers? You know what I'm saying? Who are businessmen? Who are administrators? Who are the intellectuals? You can use these terms, but as long as you say they're all exactly the same, then it's okay. But they do identify like that. You know? It's just you can't function socially without identifying all the groups. Does that make sense? Yeah, it's just... Does that make sense? Yeah. Okay. Okay, that's... That original knowledge possessed by the soul is called here natural knowledge. That natural knowledge is eternally pleasant in the soul. It is not created by perceiving the contents of the material world. The activities of that natural knowledge are called pure logic. Okay, the activities. That natural knowledge was known by the soul before the soul ever had any knowledge of the material world. Right? So this also then establishes that the soul was beyond the material world before it became materially conditioned. Does that make sense?
It means it's inherent.
It's inherent in the soul. But when you cover something, it's just like gold ring, naturally shiny. But if you cover it in mud, you can't see the shine. But the gold is still shiny. But because it's covered by the mud, who can see it? So that's the thing, is the soul is covered by the conditioning of the subtle and gross body. So you can't see that natural knowledge of the soul. Though it always peeks through. That's why no matter what goes on, there's always that quest for more knowledge and a higher position and something more noble. Even if it gets down more grungy, still means even the guys are on the street and they'll shoot you, you know, just by looking at them straight. But there's that sense of loyalty and brotherhood and, you know, taking your part and taking responsibility within their scene, you know, not with anybody else. But you understand there's always that. You can't not get that because you're dealing with souls. But the problem is because it's not connected to God, it's not given that glory of being that connection with the soul. But that's why it's working then. Does that make sense? Because no matter where it is, it's poking through in some way, but because it's materialistic, it's just a matter of time before it changes. So the modes, they take you through all that variety. You know, it's just like, let's say, you go on a tour. You go to someplace very, very big and elaborate. So they take you on a tour. So going through the tour, you get so many different experiences and different things that, like that, right? So that's what it is. The living entity's on a permanent tour of the material world. You know? So you try this, and it's, what do you call it? What's that thing? Interactive? I mean, you can make your choices and stuff like that.
Smell-o-vision.
Yeah, well, it's just like you come up and you can go this way or that way. So if you pick this way, then it's pick, you know, like that. Like this, you can go to Howrah Station, right? And you can choose a train anywhere you want in India. Like, there's 100 trains. You can choose whichever one, but whichever one you choose, that's where you're going to go. Like you choose the one to Delhi, it's going to Delhi. But it does stop at 10 stops on the way. You could get off at one of them, but if you get off, that's where you are. You understand? So that's how the material world works. It's just set patterns of things, and then you make your choices, and everybody thinks, yes, I'm so independent, I'm so unique. But, you know, it's like, how many people are living in New York? Right? 20 million? How unique is that? Right? Now, the guy living out there in the mountains in Montana, you know, that's unique. You know, who lives in Montana? Right? You know, it's like, you know, so. Does that make sense? You ever heard of Montana?
Yes. The secret.
Huh?
The secret.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Really? It's from Montana?
The jeans and the cigarettes.
Just the name.
Oh.
It's a brand.
Oh, okay.
Never heard of it.
Yeah. I never knew people lived in Idaho either. I only thought potatoes grew there. You know? But then if you think about it logically, someone has to grow potatoes, so I guess there must be some people there. It wasn't until I met a devotee from there that it's like it struck. Wow, people are from Idaho. Wow. You know. Yeah.
Sorry, I just want to add that the reason this is important is because he's refuting the empiricist philosophers who are saying that every person is born as a blank slate, a tabula rasa.
Oh.
So every person has zero knowledge to begin life, and then it's only through their senses that they acquire knowledge later on. So
okay.
He's refuting that,
okay.
That premise.
Yeah, yeah. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah. So it's very, yeah. So, okay. Yes, it's natural. But it'll always follow the natural form. It's just like, see, in Gotama's Nyaya, see, there's a few things that are there. How you can gain knowledge.
Right.
And after having, means what are the ways? Through you know, inference, through the senses, and through authority. Right? And then that knowledge that you've gained can be presented in a particular way, giving the thesis, giving its reasons, giving explanations, clearing any doubts, bringing that other, whatever the doubts that it's already included in your philosophy. Right? How can you say you have a superior position if it doesn't already include what the other person's saying? Right? The modern thing is, no, they say this and we say that. And so then it's a matter of fighting. But the point is this one already includes that. That's why it's not there's no fight. It's absorbed. Right? So that in itself, then that's all you require in logic. You don't require anything else other than the position that it should be based on authority. Right? So that authority is Siddhanta. Does that make sense? So that's all you require. But because of the material means that the mind uses and the tricks that people will use, therefore he defines so many other elements to make sure that you use these proper ones and avoid these improper ones. Right? Because people use logic to win an argument. Like, I think if you're just arguing to win an argument, that's called rhetoric. What is the technique you use to win the argument? That's rhetoric. But logic means that it's actually following a natural pattern. Right, everything logically fits. So the problem is on the material platform that'll never happen because whatever you're bringing in is from your previous experience. Right? Because my experience is there. So let's say there's a situation. So in this, from my experience, in this situation, you can do this. Like I was just thinking this morning, is that. Let's say, you know, you're on one of these drives, you know, and you come around and there's this nice big, you know, how you say, huge lake, right, like that. And it has these nice big, huge white stones and, you know, it's really nice, except on the other side of the hill, you got to watch out if you go over there. But other than that, then it's pretty good, you know, like that. And so now different people, by seeing that, by their experience, previous experience, or there's some scars, will look at that in a different way and start analyzing a different way, right? Someone who, let's say, you know, likes aesthetics will think, oh, this is very beautiful. They might want to stop for a picture or something like that, or just to impress it like this. Someone who, let's say, fell out of a boat when they were young and had a big trauma there, then, you know, it's just not going to look at it. It's going to be too, you know, going to be uncomfortable, especially as you get closer and go over a bridge, it's water. You know, it's just different for them. Someone else, you know, who's a sports person, then they'll think, hey, let's stop and swim. You understand? So they're analyzing what are the options that are there based on their previous samskaras. That's where you start from. So the problem is your logic's always going to be based on your previous samskaras. Right? You know, so that's the thing, is that otherwise, if the empiricists were correct, basically all kids go to the same school, get the same education, why don't they all turn out basically the same? Right? You know, I mean, as you go to San Francisco, all the houses turned out the same. So I mean, it's like, you know, so why aren't they turning out the same? But they're totally different.
It's genetics.
Huh?
It was a genetics.
Genetics.
Yeah.
But then what's the meaning of the inferiorist thing of you gain your knowledge and that? So then it's that knowledge with the genetics. But that's the point. Where did the genetics come from? Why are the genetics different? And if it's just chance, then why does anything matter anyway? If everything's chance, what does it matter if you have a system or not? Because having a system is just chance.
And if it's survival of the fittest, why isn't every gene the same? Because it would be the best that would survive.
Why is there so much variation? You know, why do you need a new fish when the, you know, 300 million year old fish is still doing fine? You know, it's like that, you know. You know, he's quite happy, you know. You don't need a new fish. You know. Okay, so the natural knowledge was known by the soul before the soul ever had any knowledge of the material world. So it's like he's saying here, he already comes with knowledge. But the problem is by his taste, he becomes covered. And that covering then makes it where he'll view the world in different ways. Right? Because the inferiorists don't seem to know about the modes of nature. Like that. So that knowledge is, now here's the natural knowledge of the soul. Okay, so this is what I was talking about, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay, here. That knowledge is, one, I am, right? Two, I continue to be. Three, I am happy. Four, my happiness comes from a certain place, a shelter, a reservoir of happiness. Five, it is natural for me to take shelter of that reservoir of happiness. Six, I am eternally a follower of that reservoir of happiness. Seven, that reservoir of happiness is very beautiful. Eight, I have no power to abandon that reservoir of happiness. Nine, my present condition is lamentable. 10, abandoning that lamentable condition, I should take shelter of that reservoir of happiness. 11, this material world is not my eternal home. 12, by becoming elevated in this material world, I do not become elevated eternally. So this is the inherent nature of the soul. So you see that whatever is the philosophy and this and that, there's some elements that they try to deal with this, but because of the modes of nature, it doesn't come out so good.
It would seem that some of these are not eternal, like my present condition is lamentable.
Well, this is... it's the natural knowledge of the soul. The soul knows that being in this condition, it's not working out so good. But the point is that's based on these first ones. Right? So in other words, the first eight, that's just every living entity has that. So even in the spiritual world. So that's what they're doing is I exist, I will exist, and I am happy.
Yeah.
Right?
Sounds very impersonal, reservoir of happiness.
What does the Tathasta position mean?
Spiritual.
Do you understand?
Okay.
It's spiritual, but that's why. But you see, where does it tend? It may be very impersonal, but is there a tendency towards something beyond?
Right.
Yes. So that's the thing. That's the potential. So. Hat means, in other words, if you only stay in this kind of mood, it's natural for me to take shelter. Right? So, therefore, one can be on that spiritual platform and think it's natural. But if you're not doing it, then the tendency is you go the other way. Because of the jiva is small, it has to take shelter of one of the superior potencies. Superior meaning greater. Right? So that means that either... it means it's natural for humanity to take shelter, so they do take shelter. So then they move, take the association of the eternal associates of the Lord, and then move towards that shelter. Then they develop love for God. Then you're not in that Tathasta position anymore. Right? Even though the jiva is manifest from the Tathasta Shakti, it's in the fire of the internal potency, and it stays like that eternally. So it's as good as fire. Iron and fire is as good as fire. Right? Does that make sense? It's not like when they're walking down the street that there's living entities that are internal potency, and then there's jivas, and then they've got some name for them or some some more jivas. Does that make sense? Does that make sense? You know, it's not like, you know, right now, hey, check out the goys, you know. It's not like that. It's not that there's something else, right, you know? Yes.
In it's interesting, in Brihad Bhagavatamrita, it described that those are some new souls coming. Mm-hmm. It's just, but new means they just arrived.
Yeah.
And then, you know, after some time, then those are not new anymore. But then in the beginning, they considered the new.
Yeah.
Like they came from the material world.
Yeah, because the point is they're new because they haven't... you notice the newness because they haven't developed prema yet.
Yeah.
But the point is that potential is there naturally in the soul. One takes that up, takes that seriously, then one is able to take advantage of that. So that's the whole point, is that it's natural to take shelter, right? Because he knows that this happiness... you're not conditioned, so you know that this happiness is coming from somewhere because it's not generated from myself. I am happy, but that means that that happiness is generated from somewhere else. So it's natural to take shelter of that, and it's not... I can't function outside of that. Does that make sense? Yes.
It seems between point number 8 and 9, there's some explanation needed. Because I have no power to abandon the reservoir.
I have no power to abandon that, but so therefore my present condition is lamentable.
How is that?
Because I'm not taking shelter. Because he didn't take advantage of this natural for me to take shelter. Because this natural means it's a choice. Does that make sense? It's natural. When I say it's natural for me to do this, doesn't necessarily... you can be either referring to why you're doing it, or it can be, you know, what are your options? Will it be natural for me to do this?
Yeah.
You know, it's just... does that make sense? You know, it means you could either be out with your friends playing golf, or, you know, your daughter's getting out of school and pick her up from school. So what would you do? Will it be natural for me to pick up my daughter?
Yeah.
You know. But in consideration of the business contacts and all that, then you understand. So the point is it's not necessarily that one does it.
Yeah.
That's the difficulty, because the tathasta position, then one can actually take advantage of the natural position. That's why I say it's natural to develop love for Krishna, but you actually have to do it.
Yeah.
You have to take that step. See, that's the difference between having been there and going back to there. Because now we're hearing about what it should be in that training required and what's required to get to prema. So now we take that natural seriously. So then when one gets there, one doesn't mess around. Right? Because you know what the material is, so then that side, that being in the material world, is not now a consideration. You're not willing to go back, right? Otherwise, why did you work so hard to get out of it, right? So now one will take advantage of these, the first ones.
Mm-hmm.
So it's showing the natural knowledge of the soul in its natural state, but also when the soul comes into the material world, he knows this. Because if one actually looks at it in proper light, one will see, yes, the present condition is lamentable. It's not good. You know what I'm saying? It's not necessarily you'll say it in public,
no.
You know, but, you know, on your own, you can appreciate that. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
You know? Yeah.
Can we say that jiva, or individual soul, the jiva is part and parcel of the tathasta shakti?
It's part and parcel of Krishna. It's expanded from the tathasta shakti.
But he's the part and parcel of the energy, means that the shakti, not the...
Yeah, no, but what's the point?
The point, I just want to confirm...
Well, we define him as part and parcel of the Lord, if you're going to use those terms. He's part and parcel of the Lord. All right? But he's expanded of the Lord... what part and parcel he's expanding from is the tathasta shakti. Does that make sense?
Yeah. So when the jiva return to the spiritual world, it's still tathasta shakti, or become...
It's still tathasta shakti, because that's what you're made from. So he'll be that, but he's in the fire of the internal potency. Therefore, he's as good as the internal potency. No one makes a distinction. Right? Once you come to prema, there's no distinction made. Before coming to prema, some distinction is there because you're in training. Yes?
Yep.
Yes.
I'm leaving this might sound a lot foolish, but I'm just wondering if there's a place where the soul can simply be self-satisfying without taking shelter of anything, just on its own.
But it's so small.
I know.
So how will it do that?
On its own little partner.
What would be the advantage? Atmarama means what?
Choice.
No, but Atmarama, there's no choice. You're just existing. That's what Atmarama means. You can't have both. Choice means there's others. You understand? So the point is choice is always there. That's what everybody has at every moment. Even someone's in prison, they still have choice. They can follow the rules or not. That's their choice. You know, they can eat lunch or not. You know, what they want to eat, you know, if they want to take the roll or not, you know. Does that make sense? You know, they always have the choice. You know, whether they want to make their toothbrush into a shiv or not. It's always a choice. You know, like that, you know. You know. So choice is always there.
Yeah, Maharaj, who I'm here to visit is Nitya Siddha Associates of the Lord. Are they also in the Tathasta category, like expansions of Srimati Radharani?
Means the internal potency, depends who they are, but the internal potency is internal potency. Like that. And the jivas are jivas. From what I can see, at least in our line, all the gopis, they're all internal potency. And the Manjaris, they're jivas. Like that. But it doesn't mean that they were ever conditioned. Like it mentions, Rupa and Raghunath of the six Goswami were never conditioned. Right? The other four, through practice of their sadhana, came to the platform of perfection and attained to prema. And now they've come back, so they're already on that perfect platform, but they were at one time conditioned. Right? And now they've come back with Rupa and Raghunath to preach. That's why it always meant Rupa Raghunath the Pade, because one is it's when you're saying the list, Rupa's first and then Raghunath is at the end. By saying that you include all six, but at the same time they're the leaders. The others are actually following. Does that make sense? Okay.
This point 8, I have no power to abandon that reservoir of happiness. Should we understand that to mean that even though we may have tried to turn our back on the Lord, we're never separate from Him? He's always,
you can't get, it means anything, that any pleasure you're getting from the material world is still coming from the Lord, because you can't get pleasure out of dead matter. It just can't happen. It's just that the jiva thinks, I will be happy if I do this. But what has it got to do with the soul? Nothing. You know what I'm saying? You know, you hit the gas on the car and the blue flames are coming out the back. But the point is where's the G-force? On the soul? It's on the body. You know what I'm saying? So it's not, but you've decided if that happens to the body, I'll be happy. So therefore, then Krishna arranges that, you know, it gives you that idea that you're happy. So God has to arrange the whole thing. So you still, in the material world, no living entity is happy without the Lord. But illusion means I think I'm being happy without the Lord. And actually, I'm being happy. This car is making me happy. But it's not. Krishna's making you happy. It's just you've decided that these activities in this car, that will make me happy. So Krishna puts that potency there. If you have the karma to experience it. If you don't, then you never do, you know. Does that make sense? You know, you have a Lamborghini and you live in Manhattan. right? You'll never get over 50 miles an hour. You know, you just won't. You know?
Might as well have an ambassador on the little top car.
That's a bit of a stretch, but you know, I'm saying you might as well have a limousine, so at least you're comfortable, right? A Lamborghini, you're all like this, you know, that, you, no place to put the groceries, you know, it's not, it's a problem. You know, got those weirdo doors, they open up, the rain gets in, you know, that kind of stuff. You know? Does that make sense? So unless you're pulling out in front of a 5-star hotel with some, you know, then, you know, it doesn't have any meaning. But then the problem is the valets take the car and you don't know what they're doing. You know, they're the ones that have the karma to go over 50 miles an hour. Yeah. Someone, yes?
So is there a difference between that happiness and happiness derived from devotional service?
What would you think?
Well, no, I don't mean...
Because it's here. So.
I mean...
Abandoning that lamentable condition, I should take shelter of that reservoir of happiness. The material world is not my material home, so what's that indicating?
I don't mean like that. I mean the quality of the feeling, like the, where that's coming from. Obviously...
Yeah, no, it's coming from there, but it would be like... take it that, let's say, you know, the happiness that you can get here, give it, you know, the equivalency of, let's say, 1 watt.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So just being free from material contamination would be like millions of watts, right? And then if you take that millions of watts and count that as 1 watt, then the happiness in devotional service would be considered, you know, millions and billions of watts. Right, so it's just no comparison.
Okay, but so there's a difference in the...
You know, it'd be like though we were saying, the difference between, you know, how you say, a slug and a Learjet.
But it's coming from the same place, right?
Right, it's yep. coming from the same place.
Yep. Okay.
You know? Yeah. They still have Learjets, right? Okay, just want to make sure. Okay. Yes?
Do you think it's fair to say that all these points of knowledge come from the fact that the soul is Satchidananda?
Yes.
Is just extrapolating from there?
Yeah, it means here, Sat means I am, I continue to be. And Ananda is I am happy. But the point is that being the part, meaning Jiva, being small, I'm not generating this.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not generating eternality. I'm not generating happiness. That means it must be coming from somewhere.
Yeah.
My happiness comes from a certain place, a shelter, a reservoir of happiness. Right? Because there's unlimited jivas. So, and the jiva's not producing, that means there has to be a reservoir that's big enough to produce happiness for all these jivas.
Yeah.
Right? Because in other words, the logic is not blocked by material contamination. That's why he said here. Here is that that natural knowledge was known by the soul before the soul ever had any knowledge of the material world. But the point is the those who become conditioned didn't take advantage of it. Those who moved forward and became nitya siddhas, they took advantage of it. But even you're in the material world, it's this knowledge that's covered.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So it shines through a little bit.
Yeah.
You know, so that's why you end up with all these philosophies. But the problem is depending on which place, which part shines through, or which combination, that's how you get your philosophies.
Mm.
You know, it's like, I am, okay, they deal with that, you know. I continue to be, but then that'll end. I am happy. So then you get your materialist.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It seems like this is why Prabhupada is always quoting that verse from the Upanishads, Nityo Nityanam Chaitanya.
Yeah.
From the one.
Yeah, comes the many. Many comes.
The happiness is coming from
many. Yes, yes. Yeah. No, that's a very major point. Because that's the natural knowledge of the soul.
Mm-hmm.
Is that? That work? Yeah? Okay. If logic does not take shelter of this natural knowledge, logic remains mixed with matter. Then logic is only a babbler of nonsense. Even in ordinary material science, first some axioms must be accepted. In mathematics, astronomy, or other sciences, one cannot make progress if one does not first accept the axioms. Right, so they're saying that they're dealing just on pure logic, and it's not subjective, but they're already starting with a premise. Mm-hmm. Then only they can mm-hmm. progress. In the science of understanding the supreme truth, one must also first accept some axioms, the axioms given by natural knowledge. So if you start with understanding these 12 points, mm-hmm. then you can base all your logic expanding from there. Does that make sense?
Yes.
So that's where he says, I'm the soul, I'm not the body, I'm eternally servant of Krishna. Mm-hmm. And that covers these main points. Because that will be, from this, that's the natural conclusion.
Yeah.
Right? But we have, if not taking up shelter of service to Krishna, then this knowledge becomes covered. Right? Because the point is you can't stay in a neutral state. Right? Krishna can do that, but we're energy. Energy is dependent. So that means we have to be connected to the Lord. But being Tathasta, that means we have to connect to Krishna through his bigger energies. Right? So now your choice, being Tathasta, means you have the choice. Do I connect to Krishna through his internal potency, or do I connect through the external? In any case, you're connected to Krishna. But the problem is connecting through the external, one won't be happy. Right? There's a little bit there, but that's nothing compared to, it's like coming up with, let's say, a pea and giving that to an elephant. Bon appetit, like that. it's not going to work, Yes.
I just wanted to submit that I think it's very important to understand this point of axioms and how we have to accept axiomatic truths in every sphere, material mm-hmm. or spiritual, because one thing I find in the context of preaching is that skeptics or speculators will say, well, I don't want to accept axioms. I'm not prepared to accept axioms. But as you pointed out...
No, but their axiom is that they won't accept axioms.
And they themselves within any material science or any interpersonal relationship language, there's always axioms that they're accepting. And what's interesting is that... in accepting an axiom, if you follow it, the process correctly, you can actually go back and prove that the axiom is the foundation itself by following.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's important to be able to point this out to people that it's not a matter of blind following. You can actually consider it a scientific process in the sense that you accept an axiom, you follow the process given by that,
mm-hmm.
and then you can actually... verify itself.
Mm-hmm.
But you can't stand outside and say, now I understand what you guys are doing inside this room mm-hmm. until you step in the room yourself.
Mm-hmm. Good. Yes.
Can we say the Bhaktivinoda Thakur he equates shelter as service, taking shelter? Because he doesn't mention that.
Yes, but see, the thing is this is the natural knowledge. But the Tathasta position means you have to make a choice. So this is the position. Now you make a choice whether you're going to be active taking shelter or active not taking shelter.
Means it's the next step?
It's not so much the next step. That's just the reality of the nature of the jiva. You know what I'm saying? The jiva means, if it's Tathasta, means it's situated between the two energies and it can either function under one or the other. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah. So that's the point, is that one makes that. So this is the natural knowledge of the soul. So it's naturally develops, just like the child when it's born doesn't have love for the parents, but it's natural that we will develop that love. Does that make sense? So in the same way, as it's natural, it's normal for the jiva, starting from the position, to take shelter of that reservoir of pleasure and take up that association of the associates of the Lord and develop that love for the Lord. That's the normal course of events. But the jiva has that choice that he may not do that. You know what I'm saying? Instead of, in other words, what's happening is he doesn't take shelter of that reservoir of pleasure. And so he thinks that I will enjoy things directly. But you never can, because the point is Maya is connected to the Lord. The internal potency is connected to the Lord. In fact, Maya is the shadow of the internal potency. So technically, Maya is connected to the internal potency and then to the Lord. Well, therefore, it's actually better to be connected to the internal potency and then to the Lord than to Maya, to the internal potency and then the Lord. Right? You know, it's a bit more indirect, because then through that filter, in other words, the internal potency has that full potency of Sat, Chit, Ananda. But in the material world, Sat remains, but Chit and Ananda are reduced, are constricted. So that means the actual knowledge and the actual happiness are reduced. So the element of existence is there. You know, only, who is it? He had the problem with the floor? That was called?
Hume.
Yeah, so only he has a problem with the floor. Right, you know, whether the floor will be there when he gets out of bed in the morning. But the point is why, if there's no floor, where would the bed be? He might be falling through space, like Alice, you know, down the rabbit hole or something like that, you know. But, you know, he somehow doesn't seem to worry about that. He has issues with floors, right? You know, he must have hit it too many times when he's a baby or something. You know, does that make sense? Yeah. So the thing is that it's restricted, so therefore one doesn't get that knowledge. That knowledge is always clouded. That happiness is always clouded, because that's how the material world is constructed. So if the living entity connects to God and the internal potency and God through the external potency, then it's not going to come out very good. But if he directly connects to the internal potency, then it comes out, it's very clear. So his natural knowledge is then will naturally blossom, because that the internal potency is that natural place for that. Does that make sense? Yes.
I was dependent on the samskaras, and you might exchange the words a reservoir of happiness for a bucket of halva.
Well, it depends. If the bucket of halva has been offered to the reservoir of pleasure, then it's the same thing.
My happiness comes from a certain place, a shelter, a bucket of halva.
Yeah, but if the bucket of halva is sitting out in the backyard in Macedonia, then you got a problem. You know what I'm saying? But if that bucket of halva is sitting in the temple after having been offered to the deities, then it's no problem. If it's before offering to the deity, still a problem.
Yeah.
Right? But it's only a 15-minute problem. Well, if it's in Macedonia, it might take a few lifetimes.
Yeah. That reservoir is very beautiful.
Yeah, we use that reservoir, you know, the top, all the geese sitting there, you know, all that. Yeah, it's very beautiful.
I'm eternally full.
Yes, yeah. So that's the whole point.
Down the line, yeah, it's coming down.
Yeah. Yes.
So when you were talking about the connection to the external potency or the internal potency, do you mean like somebody's dovetailing a material thing to Krishna, so therefore they're going through the external potency, internal potency, then Krishna, or somebody that's a materialist and they're still connected to Krishna whether they want to admit it or not, therefore they're going through the external potency, internal potency of Krishna?
It's the same. Just the question is which effect do you get? Do you get the effect of the internal potency, or do you get the effect of the external? The external means it's clouded and restricted. The internal potency means it's clear.
So who actually connects directly to the internal potency? So like a pure devotee?
No, it means in here what we're talking about, see, because your question has multiple situations that can be applied. The point is you're dealing here in the material world. right? Means under the control of the internal potency, external potency. But you're doing things for Krishna.
Yeah.
So therefore, Yogamaya and Mahamaya are the same person.
Yeah.
So then you're working under the shelter of the internal potency, though you're working still with the external potency. But spiritually, all the impediments are removed. But it's still inferior nature. It still will act like inferior energy. You know what I'm saying? It's still things have a beginning and an end. You know what I'm saying? But the effect you're getting is spiritual.
Yeah.
Right? Does that make sense?
Yeah. So only when we're in the spiritual world do we directly connect?
Then everything's direct there. There is no connection through the external potency.
Yeah.
But the point where we're making before is everyone's connected to God. Everyone's looking for God. Just the problem is devotees know it, so they're not an illusion, but the materialist doesn't know it, so he's in illusion. Does that make sense? Okay. These axioms are the root from which the tree of spiritual knowledge grows. Mm-hmm. I think this is bigger letters and this is smaller letters. Really? I like the bigger letters. Yeah. Somebody raised their hand.
Do you think these actions correspond to Vedanta Sutra? Because there's one, Anandamaya Vyasa, I am happy. And then furthermore, it seems to correspond to all the Sambandha versus Chit, Achit, and Ishvara.
Yeah, I mean, sure, it means that because this is the basis, this is the axioms which are the root of the tree of spiritual knowledge, then I'm sure the Vedanta Sutra, especially in that first chapter, would be establishing these. Because then I know within the first 11, it establishes the points on which the whole rest of the Vedanta Sutra will expand from.
Mm-hmm.
From what I've understood, is that the first 11 verses explain all the basic principles. And then, you know, and then some detail. So there's like, I forget how many are in the first one, but it's all established there. And then from the second one, they're already starting to deal with the different philosophies.
Mm-hmm.
Like that. Yeah. Okay, text 23. Some accept the philosophy of oneness, breaking through the barriers of the gross material world, resting in the subtle spirit material world, and pretending to remain in a trance of meditation, they take shelter of yoga. Interesting.
Yes.
Pretending to remain in a trance of meditation. Yeah, because then the question comes, is that if nobody's there to watch the yogi doing meditation, does he actually meditate?
I imagine.
Yes. You know. Commentary by Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Some philosophers do not believe in the soul's natural knowledge, nor do they completely believe in material logic. Others, accepting the idea of the soul's natural knowledge, believe in one God. Filled with various mental speculations, they take shelter of a rapt trance of meditation. However, their meditational trance is not the real thing. It is only a trick. In their pretended meditation, they pretend to break through the walls enclosing the material world, and then they pretend to see the world of spirit, the blue pearl or something, it's like that. Why is their meditation only a pretense? The spiritual world is revealed only in a genuine trance of meditation. It is not revealed in this pretended trance. Seeing only the subtle material world, the world of thoughts, they think they have seen the final spiritual abode of the spiritual beings. In truth, they have taken shelter of the world of subtle matter, the world of thoughts. Right?
Yeah.
Does that make sense? So they've only gone on to that level. So they've forgotten about the body and this and that. So it's a very attractive thing. Mm-hmm. Like sometimes you hear people going on about, you know, what, you know, how do you call it? Or the astral travel or this or that, or can you do this? And they're just so enthralled by the idea. You know, but all it is like, you know, you sit in your head all day. So, you know, at least there's, you know, the body is there and some external distractions to keep you from going crazy. But there's so the things that, you know, wow, you know, it wasn't, the rest of it wasn't there. You know, it's kind of like, hey, you know, it's called dreaming.
Yeah.
You know, so it's like, you know, so it's not something special. Right? So it's saying some believe in the natural knowledge, some don't. Right, some accept it and that there's a supreme Lord, but then they filter this through their material logic, as we mentioned before. So then they will discuss these. Like if you took some of those points and discuss those with those who are monotheistic, those, you know, they would generally to some degree accept, you know, to some proportion or another, like that. And then, you know, those who meditate, but the problem is they're only stopping the material, but without the Lord's grace, how you'll meditate on the spiritual world, right? That was already established before. You can't do it on your own. You know, it can't be done through material logic, so it's only by revelation from the Lord that it's there. And just because it's something new to you that you thought of, then, you know, that becomes a great problem, right? That people come up with something, and then the point is, it's theirs, so it never matures, it never develops, it becomes the identity. Does that make sense? So then it takes on, you know, a new apasampradaya, right? Because they just catch their own thing and then that's it. And then, because otherwise, if it was, it'd be dynamic. Why isn't it continuing? You know, all it is moving within the material sphere, and it's still within the element of control and enjoyment. Right? It doesn't go beyond that.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
The world of thought, this is
the world of
thought.
Thought, yes.
Okay. This is all the mind.
Yeah, because the point is mind is an element. So we're connected with a certain portion of that, but mind is a general principle, and so the thoughts that can be thought within the material world, those are standard thoughts. Mm-hmm. So it's just you break through into that and just move within that, then it's, you know, whatever thoughts are there within the universe, then you can, you know, so in other words, you know, experiencing thoughts that you may not be thinking now, but you know, you've thought in the past. You can't deal with something in the mind that you haven't already dealt with. Mm-hmm. So all they do is go into that, and then, you know, things from other places are coming up. You know, but it's standard stuff. You know what I'm saying? It's just that's how do you get, how is one able to see patterns in human behavior? Because the way people will think in certain situations, it's set by the modes. Right? So therefore, that's why they'll always do those things. But then they're proud to think, yes, I know, but they actually don't know, because they don't know that's coming from God and his and then his order to the material energy to arrange that through the modes of nature. So that's where they fail, because then their false ego comes up, and it's just, in other words, thinking like that is just another one of those thought patterns that are there in that whole ocean of this, the subtle material world, or the world of thoughts. Right? Some make a philosophy out of this world of thoughts. You know? And I think I can't remember who it was. Who was the author? I'm not sure if it was late 1800s or early 1900s. Or even the 20s. I don't know. He was one of the ones that started this whole just whatever came into the mind, writing it down. Mm-hmm. And he wrote this whole big work.
Yeah.
Very famous work.
James Joyce,
yeah.
Ulysses.
Yeah.
Ulysses.
Is that the one where everything's about the guy running the tavern? It's the same name, but then it comes in so many different places, it just keeps changing.
Yeah, something like that. That's
at least from that book is where the quark came from.
I don't know.
No, that's where it comes from.
Okay.
Because the guy who found the quark was reading the book at the time.
Okay. Yeah,
there's one quote about, you know, three quarks for Master Mark. You know, like that. Yeah. A quark is the sound that a seagull makes.
Okay.
Like that. You know, so it was like, you know, like
a, makes just as much sense.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. So then he even speculated on how you pronounce it, you know, whether it's a quark or a quark or, you know, whatever it is like that. And then finally he came, you know, stuck with quark, you know, like that.
A quack and a bark mixed
together. Yeah,
that's the modes.
Yeah, the quack and the bark.
The book, many people have attempted to start it, but few have finished.
Well, no, but you can't finish it because the last sentence is actually the first sentence of the book.
Okay.
It means the first sentence of the book is actually the last sentence of the book, so they start on the second sentence. And then you go through, and when you give the last sentence, which so-called concludes it, it's actually the first sentence that starts the whole thing all over again. So, yeah. Otherwise, you end up at the funny farm. You know.
The intellectuals like the twist.
Some, the ones that can handle it, like you said. I mean, this is a quantum physicist, right? They're nuts, so he can read the book, right? But some others, they try to do this kind of stuff, like that. They don't get far. No one's ever heard of their work, like that. But, you know. So, in other words, the modes of nature empowered him to make the, you know, this crazy book. And so then, you know, that is the crazy book. Right? Yes.
You said that we can't think of anything that we haven't experienced before. So does this only apply to experiences, or like, for example, today we have TV and that projects so many things that we wouldn't have ever thought of or experienced, but we now have these impressions somehow?
The point is you only notice those impressions on the television that you have experience from.
What do you mean? So you won't see any of the other stuff that's going on?
How much do you see? Right? Means you see one thing, someone else sees another, right? You know, you're watching, two people are sitting watching the same thing. One says, this is boring, the other says, this is great. So what's the one saying that it's great, and what's the one not seeing that it's boring? You know, or let's say you have an adult movie and a three-year-old walks in and is watching.
Yeah.
What does he see? He doesn't see what the adults see.
But he would have experienced that in his past lives.
Yeah, but the point is he's not aware of that at this point. But my point, what we're saying is, he only sees according to his experience.
In this current
way. No, but it goes throughout. But the point is that. That's the point of childrens. They're not seeing. Try to catch the analogy here, right? In other words, the child is looking at it, and the adults are looking at it. Okay? They're seeing two different things from one thing going on. So the point is everybody only sees what is by the particular combination of the previous experiences that are manifesting now. That is what's called your samskaras, right? You know, like the example given, I think, in the Upanishads, or that you have a young girl, a young beautiful girl, right? So for the young man, he sees something desirable. For the sage, he sees a bag of stool and urine. For the dog, he sees something nice to eat. You understand? So these means the same. So depending upon your vision, which is based on the samskaras that are rolling at the present moment, that's what you see.
Oh, okay, because then that's how you got the body that you're in to see that way.
Yeah, it means like, let's say we go out into the countryside, you know, and you see this big, nice mountain and it's glittery and stuff like that, and two friends are looking at it. One thinks, wow, this is beautiful, and the other one thinks, wow, we could start a mine here and make millions. You understand? So they're seeing different depending upon their samskaras.
Right.
Yeah. You know what I'm saying? The point is whatever you're dreaming up means you've experienced that. That's the only way you can come up with it. You can't come up with something that you haven't experienced. You know, I mentioned this to one devotee before. He became very upset. No, but I can think of anything I want. You know, you have a, you know, a purple one-eyed monster flying through the air on, you know, riding on, you know, some vomit or something like that. Yeah, but you've seen all of these, right? You heard the song and you barfed. So you put them together and now you come up with this.
So there isn't a planet with purple monsters riding vomit somewhere?
No. Okay. It means you're just taking all those, putting them together.
Right?
You understand? You know, just like, you know, you're seeing gold and you're seeing a mountain, you put them together into a golden mountain. You know, you saw a bird and then in your dream you're flying.
So it could be anything. It could come.
That's the point, but you only will put together dreams based on what you've actually experienced.
Okay.
So you may have experienced in previous lives, that's why sometimes things pop up, you don't know where they came from. Right? But it's just like Prabhupada gives the example. You have a pond, and there's mud on the bottom. And now and again, this bubble comes up from the bottom. Where did that bubble come from? So that's the point. It's like that. It just comes up into the mind. The surface of the pond is considered like the mind. So this just comes up from the bottom. Yes?
What about people's personalities? How does that affect their experiences? Like, say you had twins, and they all experienced the same thing, but they had different personalities. They would be...
Because they're different souls who have different experience, but...
So you do have something with you when you're born. You're not just a blank slate. Like, you have your personality from your...
Wasn't that what we were saying?
So you were saying everything's experience, like...
Yeah, but what... You're born based on your previous experience in the last life. We're not talking in empiricism here that you're born as a blank slate. We're talking about that the little child, I mean, why is it one little child sits there and plays nicely while the other little child goes and breaks everything?
So that's the personality which is already, which hasn't developed, but it's from something else, which is like from another.
But the other else is the previous experiences.
So they do have things from their previous life.
That's exactly what we're saying. Does that make sense? That's what we're saying. We're saying is that, that's what I was talking about. When I say the bubble that comes up and into the surface of the mind, you've never experienced it this life because it's come from a previous life. Catching that? So that means your personality as of now is based on your previous experiences.
Including your previous life.
Where did it go? Ah, here it is. That knowledge is I am, I continue to be. So what does that mean? We're talking eternal here. Does that make sense? So we're basing the basis of this conversation on the eternal principle of the soul. So from the day you came into the material world, the moment you came in, you were given a portion of the material energy of the mind that has been traveling with you since that time. It's not changing. So all the experiences from that moment to now, that what makes your personality right now.
Did you ever get rid of those experiences?
No, you won't.
Like when you go back to the spiritual world?
Yes, of course. When you leave the material world, you get rid of them. But as long as...
They're there while you have a material world.
Yes. No, they're there as long as you're in the material world. Because as a ghost, you don't have a material body, but you still have the mind. You know, when you're in hell, you don't have a material body, but you still have the mind. You know what I'm saying? You know, does that make sense?
Yeah.
So it's all based on... whatever is the combination of your experiences that are culminating in your particular reactions of right now. That's what you're dealing with. Does that make sense? Take that, yeah.
Is there anything about our eternal personality from the spiritual world that gets manifested?
No. Other than these points. I am, I continue to be, I am happy. My happiness comes from a certain place, a shelter, a reservoir of happiness. Right? Because we're taking shelter of God. That my happiness comes from my family. But your family is actually a bunch of dead matter. So how is it you get, you know, father experience, mother experience, sister, brother, you know, experience from a bunch of dead matter? That's because God empowers it. It's his potency. He's the reservoir of those relationships. He is the mother. He's the father. He's the sister. He's the brother. But we think this particular dead matter is my mother. This particular dead matter is my father. So it's still coming from the reservoir of happiness. It's just that the conditioned living entity doesn't think like this.
With all our relationships of faith.
That's right.
We're just like in illusion the whole time.
Yeah, basically. Yeah. That's the point to understand. So that means then, since you're dealing with fake father, experience, but the point is that fatherness is not the dead matter, it's actually Krishna. So therefore, if Krishna is the father, you have to deal with him how he says father should be dealt with. That's why there's rules on how you deal with your father. Because it's not actually your choice, because you want to deal with fatherness, but then that fatherness is actually God. So therefore, that's why the Shastra gives rules how you deal with the father. That's why it says, perform your duties, because you may understand this or not, but you shouldn't offend Krishna's potency of fatherness in that particular dead matter that you're dealing with. Because, you understand? But the reason that it's functioning is because there's a living entity there that wants to experience the position of being a father. But they're not actually.
Like we're just acting.
Yeah, you're just acting. Yeah. But everyone likes a good drama. You know what I'm saying? If someone put, I mean, now, let us say.
What about the relationship with spiritual master? That's not an
aspect. Yeah, but which, what is real? The service of the spiritual master, but the service of the spiritual master that, well, if he doesn't smile at me, I'm going to feel bad. That part's the material side. That's the acting side. Because then that is, you know, I'm a girl, and, you know, why isn't he paying attention to me? But he smiles at that other girl, so, you know, what has she got that I don't got? You know, all this kind of stuff. That's all the material platform. But that spiritual master is representing the Supreme Lord, and I've surrendered to him. That relationship is eternal. But it's not necessarily you'll have this form and that they'll have that form. You know what I'm saying? But the problem is, no one minds a good drama, right? Every year, right? I think it's in January, like that. They have, you know, internationally appreciated awards for someone how well he's made that illusion of people actually having a relationship, you know. And they get a little statue for it, and they come up and talk about how, you know, bless, you know, my mother and my father and my friends, you know, all this kind of jazz.
Is that just you? The soul has remembrances of the natural original relationship. Because we're not.
It's not your relationship with Krishna. Those are the natural positions of relationship. No one questions the five rasas. No one demands there should be six or only five. Excuse me, the five rasas. No one says there should be more or less. Because that's inherent. This is a reflection. We're coming to the material world not because we didn't like the spiritual world, we just weren't interested in liking it in connection to Krishna. So we want the same thing. We want to enjoy the spiritual world, but the spiritual world's not going to go for that because the spiritual world's conscious. So therefore, you're given the reflection of the spiritual world, which is the material world. And so therefore, you can go on and, you know, try to enjoy the dead matter. Dead matter doesn't care. You know what I'm saying? If you're sitting on a bus and there's some guy staring at you, do you like it? Right. Okay, maybe he's a Hollywood, you know, celebrity. Then you don't mind it. But if he's not, then it's an annoyance, right? Why? Because you're conscious. But now if you sit there, you know, staring at, you know, some dead matter, some, you know, some car or something like that, does the car come over and say, what are you looking at? You know? Yes? No? No. So that's the whole point, is that since people are going to look at it not connected to Krishna, therefore we get dead matter to stare at. And when we acknowledge that it's connected to Krishna, then we're allowed to come back to the spiritual world where everything's conscious.
So our relationships are only real if we can acknowledge that these persons can have intuitions.
Yes.
And we relate to them in that way.
Yeah.
Otherwise it's an act, and we're just...
Well, it's always an act, because the point is, are you this body?
No.
Yes, so then they're not their body either. So it's going to be an act anyway. Now it's just a matter of whether it's, you know, a bona fide play or some, you know, weirdo off-Broadway thing. Or not say off-Broadway, right?
Impro theater.
Impro theater, yeah. You know? Does that make sense? You know, some little cafe in Amsterdam someplace, you know, like that, yeah. Does that make sense? Yeah. So that's the point, is that it's there really isn't anything here, but we're so convinced there's something here, but there's not. Right? The soul's only happiness is connection with the Lord in the spiritual world. And then all those devotees, all that's real. So relation that you have with devotees, that you have a relationship with them, that's real. But it's based on the particular body you have and the particular body they have. That's the temporary aspect of it.
But that's okay if it helps you get closer to Krishna.
Yes.
You can't just be totally impersonal with nothing.
Who said anything about impersonal? The point is there's a jiva that wants to be the father. You're a jiva that wants to be the daughter. And so, therefore, Krishna says what a father should do, what a daughter should do. So you're playing the parts. You want to taste that. So, you know, it's just like the guy wants to cook Chinese and you want to eat Chinese. So it works out. There's no problem. You understand? Why can you watch a movie and be happy? You're not there. They're just flat things on the screen. In fact, they're little numbers. You know, ones and zeros, just they move very fast. You know what I'm saying? That's all it is. But you're happy with it. So the point is that the jiva is not the body, but you're happy watching through the senses of the body what's going on and the interaction of the body with the world. But that it's not real. So the jiva doesn't have any problem with that. So the problem is not, oh, it's a drama, and where's the reality? The reality is in the spiritual world. So here we try to deal with the external potency like we would with the, in the spiritual world. That's why there's Vaishnava etiquette. That's why there's Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti. That's why all these things are there. But we don't want to follow the rules. We want to be free. We want to do whatever we want. But the point is, yeah, you can do whatever you want, but that's very selfish. What about what other people want to want? You know, what about interacting with them? Because who's saying, no, I want to do free, is going out in the middle of the forest and just living there? Nobody. Right? If they were, you wouldn't hear about them, you wouldn't read about them, there'd be no articles about them, because they're in the middle of the forest and no one knows about them. So that means everybody that you've heard about that says, I want to be free, is they want to be free with other people. But the problem is why do the other people have to agree with your kind of freedom? Why do you set the rules? Why are you the center of attention? You know what I'm saying? So that's not a good drama. You know? Does that make sense? You know, the guy who wanted to play the lead part knows all the lines. He used to do it for the last 3 years. Right? But now a better one has come along and you're too old for the part. But when you get up there, then you start to say his lines. Is that a good drama? No. So that's why it says stick to your own lines. Do your own duties. Of course you can do someone else's duty. Right? I mean, probably mentions women in this life were men in their last life. So the point is now you're the woman, do the women part. The guys who are, the men, they were women in their last life. Right? So now they get to be the man. So if it's, no, we want to be, well, you were the man last life. Now you want to be the man this life? That's not fair. You know, let the men be men, let them, the women be women, because next life it'll switch anyway. So it is fair. You know what I'm saying? So in other words, you stick to your part, and it works really, really well. Does that make sense? But the point is Krishna's the one who gives the rules. Follow his rules, it works out nice. You go back to Godhead. Don't follow his rules, you stay here.
For the sequel.
For the sequel, yes. The sequel.
Never better than the original.
The sequel is never better. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Especially in Kali Yuga, it just gets worse. Yeah. Then they start a new one, right? Then it goes back.
Right. The prequels are really bad.
Yeah, that's true. So then, does this make some sense? See, you've come in at a particular point in the philosophy, because one has to consider this is a, you know, this is the about 3/4 of the way through a 3-year course. So many of these things have been discussed. You know, so this just happens to be at the point where we're in this point in philosophy where we're showing that all these philosophies, anything anybody has, isn't real because it's being filtered through their material consciousness and logic. So they can't actually see reality from the material platform. And in the morning class, then because Bhaktivinoda Thakur is discussing spiritual rasa, he doesn't want you to connect it with material rasa, so he's completely separated them and left one in that position of the material world. There isn't rasa, it's not real. There's no rasa here. Right? It's a fragment of something, but it's the senses that are having the rasa, not the living entity. Right? The sense contacts the sense object, so the rasa's there. It's not with the jiva. Does that make sense? It's just the jiva is just thinking, well, if this happens, then I'll be happy.
We should just recognize our senses. What our senses are doing, so we can
detach. No, you should recognize what your senses are doing to engage them in the Lord's service. If you're engaging in the Lord's service, you're automatically detached. It's not about developing detachment, it's about attaching yourself to Krishna. Mm-hmm. To do that, you naturally have to detach. So you only look at that detachment element where one's to attach the material, to attach it to Krishna. So then you'll analyze that, but it's not about detachment, it's about attachment. Right? Detachment naturally comes. Like if you eat, the hunger automatically goes away. You don't have, means while you're eating, do you have to separately endeavor to get rid of your hunger? It goes away automatically. So when you engage in devotional service, in pure devotional service, the material automatically goes away. But the point is to be able to define pure devotional service against mixed devotional service. So that one is always aware of being engaged in pure devotional service. Does that make sense? You're going to survive? You're not going to go home tonight and your whole world's been shattered. And who am I? Okay. Just to make sure. Okay.
Om Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare
Jai Srila Prabhupada ki
Jai
Samaveta Bhaktivedanta ki
Jai
Jainatai Gaura Premanati.